But let's go now to a local author, and what a just a charming young lady, Betty Lou Higgins. She's attended college at Cleveland State and Baldwin Wallace, and we're going to talk about lost restaurants of downtown Cleveland. Betty Lou, how you doing?
I'm good, especially if you just said I was attending college instead of attended, because you just took a lot of years off my life.
I meant attending. But it's just, you have attended Cleveland
State. Yes, I have.
Yes.
I was just feeling so young when you said that. I couldn't help myself.
Yes, I wish I could say I'm attending. But now that I'm almost 60, I could probably come back to class and monitor them. And anyway, it's just great to have you on the show. And, the lost restaurants at downtown Cleveland, goodness, I mean, there's so many of them. The Allendorf Chop House, the Allerton Hotel, the Alpine Village. Captain Frank's, to write this book, it must have taken a lot of time to do that and a lot of research, huh?
It did, and you're right. Those are fabulous restaurants, and it was great to get involved with finding them and learning more about them. Some, of course, I have actually had visited before they went out of business, but most of them I never had the chance to be there in person. So it was definitely a time travel trip in many ways, and it did take a lot of time to put it all together.
Our guest, Betty Lou Higgins, and Betty Lou will be at the Music Box Thursday, February 23rd, 7 p.m., and Mike Miller will be the moderator for that. And if you have a chance to make it down there, Betty Lou always gives a great talk. She's a very interesting person, and we're going to, you'll get to know that as we continue the interview. Betty Lou, but look at this long list of fabulous restaurants. I didn't want to say just right, but a lot of them are fabulous. Which one stands out to you as something that young people today wouldn't believe existed?
Ooh, that is a tough question. I guess in a historic sense, the most obvious answer is Otto Moser's, because it was really the only restaurant that continually paid homage to all of the great stars that came through Cleveland and played here, at first at the Euclid Avenue Opera House, and then later at the Metropolitan and at the Playhouse Square theaters. He just kept collecting their pictures when they came to his restaurant and putting them up. And even now, though that restaurant is gone, the Republic, which is sitting in its Playhouse Square location, has managed to get copies of some of the pictures that he had on his walls, and they've got a beautiful display on the walls there at the restaurant that's in its location now.
Yeah, it's quite a place, Otto Moser's. And how about the Caxton Cafe?
Well, that, unfortunately, is one of the few places I never got to go to. But you're right. That, I mean, of course, its most impressive thing for people to think about now is that Michael Simon was there. And so that was pretty impressive. And it was pretty exciting for me when I accidentally tripped across a lady in Lakewood just as I was starting this book. I was browsing some stores on Detroit, and she actually met him at the Caxton Cafe, and he came and talked to her. Her son was working there, and so Michael came out and, said, "Hi, how are you?" to them, and she got all excited about that. She went down there for her birthday, and so it was exciting to talk to her, and in fact, her memory is in the book in that chapter.
I remember this, Betty Lou. I went down to Captain Frank's in 1983 and had lobster, and
oh.
I used God, I loved Captain Franks.
Yes, it was exciting. I was there several times, including right after my husband and I got engaged. He was from Sandusky and not real familiar with things downtown. We had gone downtown to pick out a ring, and I took him there. He was a boater, and we just loved it, so it was kind of romantic. But I'd been there on several other occasions, and the view of the lake and the city from Captain Franks was unmatched.
I would say there's a very rustic, romantic feel to it. Austere, but yet very full of character. And I,
yeah, for sure.
What are some of the other restaurants we should remember that, you know, that really have fallen off the radar?
Well, pretty much most of them are memorable in some ways, and I always get people telling me stories about unusual things that happened to them or that somebody else told them that they remember. One of probably the most popular is the Contiki in what is now Renaissance Hotel. And it was just so unusual for this area. It was actually part of a chain of Contiki restaurants. But, you know, going into that place all decked out in its, you know, Asian, Hawaiian splendor in the middle of winter here in Cleveland was definitely kind of a weird juxtaposition, but yeah. Sure made you feel good.
Absolutely. Man, and some of the restaurants had unusual signs and windows, and one of them, if I'm not mistaken, a hard-boiled egg with every drink.
Yes, the Monkey House. One of my favorite stories is the Monkey House because, as you know, it actually had monkeys in the restaurant.
Good Lord.
And I just cannot imagine going into a place
no.
and, you know, finding monkeys in the restaurant. But, yes, there indeed were monkeys in the restaurant there. And they also had a couple of chickens. They had a kangaroo. They had, well, the kangaroo was actually at a different location, but he had one. And there was a bear named Kai. And the bear kind of scared everybody, but not enough to stop them from sprinkling itching powder on, I mean, on the ape's back. The ape was the one that they were putting that on, and the bear was there. And, I mean, you've got a bear, an ape, monkeys, and chickens running around. I'm not so sure that the hard-boiled egg with every drink was the draw.
Well, I would imagine the hard-boiled egg and a drink would probably help forget where you're at for a little while.
Yeah. And maybe make you a little less intimidated by the wild animals.
Yeah, that's got to be absolutely insane. You're eating dinner and there's this monkey flying around and bears and that's. What was the address of the Monkey House?
I don't have an exact address. It was on Ontario Street near Huron. I tried to get an actual address and couldn't come up with one, so I'm not really sure.
Do you know when it closed?
When it closed?
Yeah.
Roughly? Let's see, I'm looking here. Well, it was open in 1905.
Yes.
But no, I don't know that. There were a lot of things about some of those really old ones that I just could not, you know, come up with. So,
yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't have that. If someone's really looking for it, I'll try and find it for them. But there was a point at which I had to kind of give it up.
I understand. I mean, the Monkey Club. I'm now things are running through my mind. I go, wow, wouldn't that be a great place to have lunch or something and take somebody from out of town? They wouldn't believe it.
Or, of course, it might scare them. I'm not so sure.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that would be the case as well. Well, I know one place that wouldn't scare them, the Alpine Village, which in 1934 was in the Playhouse Square area.
Yes, it definitely would not scare them to go there. That was one of the more popular places in the city. They had stage shows. Big stars would come there. They did radio broadcasts from there. So that was a really big deal. And Herman Perchner, the owner, was one of Cleveland's colorful characters. He was known to be able to carry 55 mugs of beer on a tray to deliver them to the customers in the restaurant. So like the monkeys, there was something to watch.
55? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, there's even a picture in the book of him with the mugs on the tray. Supposedly, he slid into the tables like a baseball player sliding into base. But I cannot even imagine lifting the tray, much less delivering it somewhere.
Well, not only that, but they also had a dance floor that could be raised and lowered.
Right. Right. Presumably, he did not do that on the floor as it was going up and down, but you never know.
Wow.
He was a circus performer. That's where he started, so who knows?
Yeah, I guess Bob Hope and Dwight D. Eisenhower were there for dinner.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of the stars went to a lot of the different restaurants around here besides Otto Mosier's and Alpine Village. They went to Chef Boyardee's place. They, went to the Parthenon. They went to Sweetwater Cafe in the Playhouse Square. So they have to eat somewhere when they're in town.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah.
And they could have possibly eaten at the Golden Pheasant.
They could have. Another mysterious item were the Chinese restaurants. We had a lot of them we still do, but so many of the comings and goings of these restaurants are lost to history. I had one gentleman get in contact with me looking for more information about his relative's restaurants, but he couldn't find it. I couldn't find them. The ads are all over the Cleveland Plain Dealer and the press, but historical information beyond, what they're serving or what their hours are is pretty hard to come by in a lot of these places. So unless there was some colorful connection like Herman Perchner or Otto Mosier or something, you don't get a lot of background.
Right. The Golden Pheasant was next to the Winton Hotel and opened in 1919.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, my. Chef Boyardee. Tell me a little bit more about the legend himself.
Well, he came over from Italy and first started working in New York, where his brother was, and eventually moved up to chef. And Cleveland got a little jealous about the whole thing and decided that they needed him to come to Cleveland. So they wooed him, and he came, and kind of the rest is history. He started at the Winton Hotel, which is Pick Carter now, and went through a whole bunch of name changes. But then eventually he went and started his own restaurant, and it too went through a whole bunch of different names. It was the Garden of Italy for a while. It was Chef Hector's. Then it was Chef Boyardee's, and kind of a, I guess, identity crisis thing. But while he had the restaurant that was Chef Hector's, Chef Boyardee's, not while he was at the hotel, he started to become very popular, and people started asking for his sauce and his dinners. And since he wasn't really willing to give them the recipe to the sauce, he would fill jars of with the sauce. And they'd go home, they'd complain that it didn't taste right. He told them they were using the wrong pasta, so he gave them pasta. And eventually, he basically created takeout dinners when some friends of his got the idea that they should package it all as one thing. They had a grocery store. How perfect is that?
Right.
So he started packaging the meals, and it just took off. It was inexpensive. You could serve an entire family. A lot of this started during the Depression and as we were coming out of it. So, and then during the war, so money was tight. And eventually it grew so big that they became basically their own separate company. And when he sold it to American Home Foods, they kept his picture to be kind of the
symbol.
Yeah, the symbol of it. And so then they changed the name to Boyardee. His real name is not spelled that way, which makes it difficult to know how to pronounce it. Boyardi is his name, and they changed it to the familiar Boyardee, so everyone could say it and they could spell it.
Phonetically, yeah.
Yeah. So, but his other big thing was he supplied these meals to our World War II soldiers. He cooked the meal for President Wilson's wedding and for the returning World War I soldiers when President Wilson held a big meal in their honor. And for me, it was an important place because when we were growing up, we'd come downtown at least once a year at Christmas time, and my dad would always take us to his restaurant. And he would say, you know, Chef Boyardee, like on the cans, this is his restaurant. Well, that was half the impressiveness of it, but the other half was the weirdness of that restaurant, which looked like a dumpy old warehouse on the outside. And then we'd go downstairs, and it would just open up into this giant room with all the red check tablecloths and everything. It was just gorgeous. And the food was so good, but it was like, well, why is he in this building? I don't know. I never did find an answer. But
yeah. Well, he had a pretty good life. He died of natural causes June 21st, 1985 in Parma, and he's buried at All Souls Cemetery in Chardon. But he certainly left a lasting incredible legacy with his products and great stuff. Now, when you would typically go out to one of these wonderful restaurants, it's not going to break the bank. You could afford to do this in most cases.
Well, we think so, but our prices now are so different than what they were then that I'm not sure you can compare it. It's like talking about, remember when gas was 32 cents a gallon? Well, yeah, we remember that, but you know, our income at the time was not what our income is now.
Right.
So I don't know that we can easily say that it wouldn't break the bank. I think there were a lot of places that were considered expensive by the scale of the day, but to us the prices seem unbelievably inexpensive.
Betty Lou Higgins, our guest live right here on WCSB. And if you have a question or two, you can give us a call, 216-687-3515. The book, Lost Restaurants of Downtown Cleveland. Fascinating stuff. Betty Lou, you've done a wonderful job here. And is there a particular restaurant or part of this book that you're most proud of?
Well, actually, what I'm kind of most proud of is what ended up coming out based on where the conversation started when Arcadia Press asked me to do the book. When my editor called, the original intent that they wanted me to take care of was Public Square to East 9th Street. And I was just kind of appalled. I said, you can't ignore going to Playhouse Square. I mean, that's a huge part of the city. Clevelanders will go nuts if you chop it off at East 9th Street. So, okay, they agreed that it was okay to go to Playhouse Square. And then they made a point of saying you can't discuss any restaurant that is currently in existence. Well, this is 2018. Otto Mosier's is sitting in Playhouse Square.
Wow.
And I, no. You know, you cannot have a book about Cleveland historic restaurants and not include Otto Mosier's, even though it's sitting in a different location. And I explained about the pictures and how historic it was, and it was the oldest operating restaurant in Cleveland at the time. And I said, Clevelanders won't accept no Otto Mosier's. So he said, okay, that's the only one you could have that's still in existence. Well, so I get that win. And then, of course, we all know COVID hit, or right before COVID hit, actually, they went out of business. And so now I feel guilty that somehow.
Yeah. Betty Lou, we got our phones are ringing off the hook. Let's take a question from the Baron Nightwolf. Yes, sir, you're on the air.
Hello, Ms. Higgins. When I first came to Cleveland back in the late 1970s, two of the restaurants that I remember best, of course, which were essentially were side almost side by side, separated by a parking lot, that, of course, was Seagram's, which is notorious because it used to be a place that Gallardi used to hang out, Mr. Ernie Anderson.
I'm sorry, say the name again. I didn't catch it.
Seagram's.
Oh, Seagram's. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, indeed. As a matter of fact, they say that that when the movie was going on, that they'd sneak over there for a drink before he had to be back on the air.
Wow.
Yes. They say that he used to do that. And my favorite restaurant was just a stone's throw away. And that was the Parthenon, which was where the old Alpine Village used to be, apparently.
Right.
But indeed, everyone of course loved to see them set the Saganaki on fire and the skillet that they brought to your table and put it out with lemon. That was beautiful. I remember once when Steve Allen and Gene Meadows and their entourage after a show came in, and I was right there having a late dinner at the time, and I remember that for the rest of the duration they had a picture of that was taken of Nick the owner with Steve and Jane and their entourage.
Oh,
they had it over the bar.
All right. Thank you, Baron.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, very interesting stuff. We have callers that they know things. They're just amazing. We have another caller. You're on the radio.
Hello. Hey, thanks for taking my call. Back in the day, my mom, it was my 16th birthday, and she goes, "Where do you want to go? It's your choice. Pick it. We're downtown shopping." And, "Mom, I want to go to the Spaghetti House on East 9th Street." It had some old history, mafioso, and I guess in the latter-day sports writers and stuff would gather in there and go in those little nooks and crannies of the restaurant. Could you elaborate on that a little?
Yeah, it was a very popular restaurant for a very long time, and Mario and Maria Brigati opened it. He had worked in a restaurant like that in New York, and so he kind of modeled it after that. Interestingly enough, when they first opened, they were in an area where there were a lot of Turkish residents, and so he would cater to them. He'd serve Turkish coffee, and they would smoke Turkish cigarettes down there. But one of the unusual things about the restaurant, besides the fact that they were famous for brown sauce for their spaghetti, unlike most of the other Italian restaurants at the time, was the artwork that Mario and Maria put together that kind of became a symbol of them. They had sculpture and art pieces down in the dining room in the 1930s, which eventually got replaced by murals that were put up of Italian scenes, which were there really till the end, as far as I know. So they were almost like an art gallery. And at the end, I didn't see this myself, but I spoke to several people who talked about the fact that sometimes in the upper room they would actually have an art exhibit up there. So, yeah, it's interesting to think that the restaurant served food and art, basically.
Very unique stuff, Betty Lou. It's great to hear those stories because these are things that a lot of people just don't know. And thank you, caller, for that. A very, very good call. If you have a question for Betty Lou Higgins, you could certainly call 216-687-3515. We'd love to hear, about restaurants that, maybe we haven't talked about yet. Like this next one, the Silver Grill.
Everyone's favorite is the Silver Grill.
Yes.
And, with good reason. The tea rooms and restaurants in the stores were so popular for so long. And you couldn't really get away with it without going there, particularly in the 40s and 50s. It was an event to go shopping, and women would go down there, and sooner or later they'd have to eat. And so the, a lot of times, particularly at the beginning, that was about the only place that they that it was considered proper for them to eat. And some of the other restaurants were basically too expensive. The Silver Grill was in the top floor of Higbee's and became one of the more popular ones. They had special menus for the children. They had a fountain with goldfish in it, that, and the whole room was just gorgeous, all Art Deco and done in greens and silvers. And so it was just one of the places to go. And, of course, at Christmas, you'd go there, you'd eat lunch, you'd see all the fancy windows decorated for Christmas, just like they showed in the movie Christmas Story, which was actually filmed there. So the Silver Grill was definitely one of the places to eat.
Now, I grew up in Lakewood and still live there. Miller's Restaurant
was not between Public Square and Playhouse Square.
But I know, but there were rest. It was not. That's true. But we would go to Miller's, and then we would go downtown. And
right.
So we would try to compare them, and the Silver Grill was just one of those restaurants that just, to me, was above all others.
Yes, and you know what? You are not the first person to tell me that about Miller's. People ask about that all the time, and those sticky buns were just out of this world. So, speaking of which, since it was not in my location, this book, we are discussing a sequel. So, at this moment, we're looking for suggestions as to either what geographic area we should cover or what particular restaurants are of interest. So if anyone goes to my website, EdenValleyEnterprises.org, and goes to the contact page, they can send me an email with suggestions or contact me on Facebook. There's a whole page for Lost Restaurants of Downtown Cleveland. And send your suggestions or ideas. And, of course, the geographical area suggestions should not be so large that it doesn't make sense to be part of Cleveland. Like, we don't want to upset the man who wrote The Lost Restaurants of Columbus.
I understand that. Yeah. Betty Lou, we have another call waiting, but I just wanted to let everybody know you're the artistic director and founder of the Eden Valley Enterprises, known as EVE, where you're involved in researching, writing, producing, performing, and you've done over 40 productions, if I'm not mistaken. So you're involved in a lot of different things there, not only, you know, with writings. You're multifaceted.
I try. Yes, we call ourselves the best kept secret in Cleveland because we've been around since 1977, and hardly anybody knows our name, unlike Cheers, where
yeah, everybody knows you, right?
Yeah, which is just another restaurant connection. What can I say?
No, it's very good, very good. Caller, you're on the radio.
Hi, I'd like to know, there was a restaurant around League Park called the Spaghetti Inn. I was told the ball players used to eat there. Do you know where that was?
I do not. League Park.
It's a little bit out of downtown.
Out of downtown.
Yeah. Oh, this is all downtown. So it, 66th and White, I think it is, around
Lexington.
That area.
I would suggest that you contact the Baseball Heritage Museum located at League Park. They have a very wonderful staff there. And they might be able to answer that question. I know they're doing a lot of work restoring the park. The museum there is fabulous. Mm-hmm. And Bill, who runs it, is Bob Zimmerman, is doing a lot in terms of trying to expand things in the neighborhood. And if anyone knows it, he'd be my first person to go to, and he probably has the information or knows where you can get it.
Bob's very smart, and Ricardo Rodriguez has been on the show before, and he's the curator, so he would know too. And I have to say, if you've not been down to League Park in 66 in Lexington, my goodness.
Oh, my gosh, it's fabulous. We have a show called You Can't Play Ball in a Skirt about Alta Wise from Regersville, Ohio, who played professional baseball on a men's team in 1907. And they played at League Park. And we have done that program for the museum a number of times. And shortly after they opened, he had us come down there to do the program. It was fabulous. They actually had someone, there was a team, several teams playing baseball out in the park at the time. So, yeah, if you haven't been there, you definitely need to go there. It's wonderful.
Yes, it is. And I've been able to play on that field in the last couple of years.
I mean, you did?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
Friends of mine were able to, you know, procure the field, and we played on it at least five or six times. It's all turf, but it's still beautiful. It really is.
Yeah, yeah.
And there, we just had another caller. I'm going to ask this one on behalf of him. Top of the Town.
Top of the Town. Yeah, another favorite of people, part of a chain from Stouffer's. And I don't have a lot of information about it. One of the draws I know, though, was that they had a lot of good musical entertainment. So that was a pretty big deal. Stouffer's, of course, started here in Cleveland, and several of their chains were in town, including Top of the Town, along with their original restaurants. So that was a very important part of our history because of the fact that that whole company started right here. And, of course, now their whole food business and frozen foods and everything located in Solon is still a big part of our history.
Yeah, it's remarkable. I mean, there's so many great places. Now, a couple of big questions here. Where can people get the book?
Good questions. Well, you can get it online at Arcadia Press. There's links on the Eden Valley website. You can get it at Visible Voice Books. You can get it at most Barnes & Noble. It's available on Amazon. So there's quite a few places you can get it. If your local supplier of Arcadia Books don't have it, ask for it. And you can always check in with me, and I can direct you to where they are. And whenever I'm out doing programs, I have the book available for sale. So if you see one of my programs, whether it's the restaurant program or any of our other ones, I will have the book available as well.
Lost Restaurants of Downtown Cleveland is the book, and you will be at the Music Box.
And I will have books available there, too.
Good. February 23rd, Thursday night, 7 p.m. Are there any other places that you're going to be speaking?
Yes, I will be doing the next Lost Restaurants program will be at Kirtland Library, but that is not until April, and I have several others that are in the process of dates and times being confirmed, so I can't tell you right off the bat where those will be, but you can check our calendar. The next public one for the restaurant program is the April 12th one in Kirtland. But then other than that, I'm working out into April and March, so there's also going to, well, I have, strangely enough, I'll be doing ghost stories at the Fairview Park Library in October.
Wow, right over by Gunzelman's. All right.
Yeah. So the calendar changes constantly, and like I said, I've got a bunch coming up in the spring that are just being finalized. I do have to make a plea, however, if you don't mind.
No.
On March 24th through the 26th, there's a women's storytelling program in Fairfax, Virginia. On the 25th, there is a contest about a woman's story that the woman must portray perseverance. And I won the contest along with seven other storytellers to actually go there and tell the story. And then there'll be another contest to pick a winner. So, and you can get to it by Zoom. The information is on our website, so you don't have to drive to Virginia to listen to it.
Great.
I'll be telling the story of Grandma Emma Gatewood from Ohio. She was the first woman to solo through hike the Appalachian Trail in 1955 at the age of 67, after she raised 11 children and survived domestic abuse.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Fabulous person. Yep. And so if you can, please dial in and vote for me and enjoy the stories of other women of perseverance.
Yes, a great story. Betty Lou, one more call here. You're on the radio. Hello. You're on the
Hello.
Radio. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering, I just tuned in a little while ago, so I don't know if you've covered this. The Players, Pizza, and Pasta in Lakewood?
No, this is for downtown. This is for downtown Cleveland restaurants only. Yeah, this is for the downtown restaurants only. But that's a good question nonetheless. And hopefully that, Betty Lou, you could have maybe a book that would expand far beyond that at some point.
Yeah, that's what we're looking for the suggestions for, since we're looking at a sequel and whether or not we need to just still stay downtown, or whether we should look at some outlying areas, or maybe just concentrate on specific restaurants that people are interested in that are no longer around. So,
yeah.
So any stories anyone has about places that are the people who operated them, or something that happened at a restaurant that doesn't exist anymore, by all means, feel free to email me the story. And if I use it, you'll certainly be credited, as you can see in this book. And it would be a great help as we determine where we go and what we cover from here.
You were wonderful, and I wish you the very best. And when you have your full schedule of speaking engagements, let me know. I'll make sure people on my show know that.
I certainly will. Thank you so much, Ray, for allowing me to join you today and to talk about this topic. And thank you for letting the people call in. I love having audience questions.
We have great callers, believe me. We'll talk soon, and we'll see you down at the Music Box.
Great. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Betty Lou Higgins. What a nice lady.